The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, welcome to my program. It is always fun to be on the line with someone that is doing something for the kingdom of God, and that would be true today. I have Gail Porter on the line. Let me introduce you to her because I've just recently become introduced myself. Gail is a person that writes, and she is one that would have the gift of writing. And in addition to that, she worked for something, an organization that we all love, Campus Crusade, now called CRU, not for just a small while, but she worked with them for 50 years. Now that in itself, why, it's worth at least a gold watch, right? That's right. Amazing. Yeah. 50 years. Gail, you sound like you're in college. That is amazing. Way to go, and welcome to my program.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Well, I'm so excited. I got a strong encouragement from our good friend, Pastor Scott George, who was the one that told me about you. And I'm assuming that you're part of his congregation in the south part of Orlando.
Yes, wonderful congregation. I've learned, my faith has deepened. So yes, he's my pastor and my friend.
Well, he is a great guy, and you couldn't have a finer guy for a pastor, let me tell you. Scott George is wonderful. And absolutely, your story is truly, truly amazing, because I think the longevity of your experience with Campus Crusade, I can't even begin to imagine how many stories. When you sit down to tell somebody about your experiences, both stateside, and then you worked for years in the Philippines as well, and we yes, want to hear all about that. But I'm sure that it's just like, where do you start? Your brain must start exploding with images and people and stories and the faithfulness of God. And then as a writer, I know what that's like, because you're sitting down with a typewriter, or nowadays on a computer or word processor. See, I'm old enough, Gail, that I used to write on a typewriter. You yes, would have too.
Yes.
A Selectric, an IBM Selectric, right?
Right.
My goodness. I learned to type on one of those mechanical typewriters in high school, and I think I hit the blazing on that one. I hit the blazing number of 42 words a minute, and I thought, boy, I am cooking on this thing. But that would be like
that was good enough for you.
That was good enough for me back in that day, and that works. But so first of all, tell me, how did you come to know the Lord? What would be your story?
Well, my story begins as a sophomore at Oregon State University. And that day I was in the student union preparing for my midterms. So a girl walked by, and she started a conversation, and I invited her to sit, and we were just talking about life, and she began to talk about spiritual things. And then she asked me this question: would you like a deeper spiritual faith? And of course I said yes. I was very active in a church, especially in my youth group, and loved God, prayed, and followed him, and yet who doesn't want a deeper faith? So she said, well, I have a booklet that explains how you can know God better. And I said, oh, Carol, I'd love to read that with you, but I really need to study my midterms. She said, well, there is a student meeting every Wednesday sponsored by Campus Crusade for Christ, and it's held in different places on campus. And the one on this Wednesday is at the Kappa Delta sorority house. And I went, Kappa Delta? That's my sorority. I live there. So she said, well, great. Maybe you could join us. So that was so amazing in itself. But I went home and asked my friend Gwen, could you come to the meeting with me? So we went from our bedrooms down to the living room. Many students had already gathered. And at least I had someone there with me. So the speaker, then he said, God wants to have a personal relationship with you. And I thought, I have never heard that before. I didn't know that. It was a whole dimension of life that I knew I was missing out on. So my heart was very eager for that. So he invited those who wanted to know more to stay. And then he gave us prayer, and I prayed to accept Christ that night. So afterward, I wandered into the kitchen where we were having refreshments, and I saw the speaker, Bud Hinkson, and I said, I pray that prayer, and I just feel like I'm on my way, which I just had that sense. So after the meeting, I went upstairs, decided to look in my mirror and see if I could see any changes. And I saw two bright, shining eyes looking back at me, and I knew God had changed my life in that moment. So that is just a precious memory for me. And after that, the Campus Crusade had Bible studies going on campus, so I joined, and of course, deepened my faith for sure. And as time went by, then the staff, some of them would say, well, Gail, so after graduation, are you going to join the staff of Campus Crusade? No, I have plans to be a legal secretary in San Francisco. Why San Francisco? I don't know. So anyway, then as my senior year approached, I learned that they needed trained secretaries at Campus Crusade's headquarters in California. I thought, how I could use the 4 years of training here at Oregon State and work for a Christian organization. That's wonderful. So I did join the staff, went down to California, and worked at Arrowhead Springs there for over 6 years, and loved every minute of it, was able to use my training, but had many experiences with staff there and disciples. So then the beginning of my seventh year, they invited me to be part of the advanced team that was going to Seoul, Korea to help prepare for a huge Christian training conference they were having there. And so as I thought about it and prayed about it, my heart just said yes. Actually, that's a little bit surprising. I'd never been overseas. Didn't have any basis for understanding what it'd be like to live in a foreign country. But God gave me faith for 6 months. So a friend of mine who was also on the advanced team, we packed our missionary barrels and tootled off, flew over to Korea. And it was just a wonderful experience there, just the preparation. We were mostly centering on the international delegates that came. There were 3,000. That came. So we continued our work. I went in February. The conference was in August. That was amazing to behold, because they trained 320,000 people during that conference. And sometimes in the evenings, well, always in the evenings, we were at Yoido Plaza, an airstrip there. And some nights were a million people gathered to hear the music and the messages. So that whole experience of just seeing the harvest and the discipleship and the effects of training. And so it just, those 6 months were precious. But I do have to back up about midway in those 6 months. Bailey Marks came to town. Now, I had known Bailey in California days, and he was now director of Asia. So he, of course, knew I was in Korea, and he said, Gail, when you finish your assignment in Korea, can you come to the Philippines and serve in the Asia headquarters? And so let me pray about it, I told him. But by then, I just had a heart for Asia. I loved the spiritual hunger and the interest, and God had provided everything I needed for those 6 months. So I said, yes. So several other friends, staff friends, and I flew to the Philippines, and that was the start of my time in the Asian headquarters office there. And I envisioned a term, and then I'd go back. So at the end of that term, I prayed and God just confirmed stay.
How long of a period was that term?
2 years. Yes. And then I prayed at the end of the next 2 years, and I sensed God saying to me, just stay there until I tell you to leave. So the years folded into years, and I was part of a Filipino church over there, had a lot of opportunities to help the youth and the women. We also had a discipleship ministry going on with professionals in town. I was able to go on campus some. So all those wonderful things that are my passion, along with using my skills in the Asian headquarters office. And we had directors' conferences in different countries. I traveled all over Asia. And so eventually, a Philippine National Office developed a team that would do what we were doing in the area office. So all of us left at the same time. And I remembered how God said, just stay there till I tell you to leave. Well, it was obvious. That was the time to leave. But I'll tell you, I left after 23 years in the Philippines.
Mm. That is amazing. 23 years. Now, for someone that, like myself, I've traveled, but never for a long period of time, certainly not longer than a couple of weeks overseas. What is it like the first time that you make a trip and you're there for an extended period where it no longer feels like a vacation? What is that like?
You just become a part of a whole new community, a whole new culture. And it's expanding. I immediately knew this was just going to expand my world. And then you come to the personal part, you're just making personal friends. And I had so many opportunities to share Christ. In fact, I was leading a Bible study on campus, of course, with a Korean who knew English, so she could help me translate. But even that, it just got me right into daily lives of some college students. And I still am in touch with two of those people that were in my Bible study.
That's wonderful. So friends that last decades, basically, right?
Yes.
I have a few of those myself, and they are very, very special friendships, and so they are gifts from God. Friends, if you've just tuned in, I am talking with Gail Porter, and she is a longtime servant of Christ. She was with Campus Crusade for Christ, now called CRU, for 50 years, and she's also a writer. We haven't even touched on that yet, but we're going to hang around. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Back again with Gail Porter on the line. It is such a delight to talk to her. Someone that has given her life really in a single focus, and that is reaching out to others with the news of the gospel. And she's done that. She's also a writer and has written some very powerful books as well. Gail, you know, when I think about someone that took a trip like you did, and you're basically leaving not only the confines of your home area or your city, but also you're leaving the states, the United States, and you're going to a foreign country. This first trip in Asia, in Korea, I believe, and then ultimately to the Philippines. My question is, what were your parents? What do they think about all of that?
Well, my extended family, they were all excited about the 6-month adventure. But they were quite shocked when I explained I wasn't coming back, I was going on to the Philippines. So that was a big adjustment for them. But I think one of the most pleasurable parts of that is that my mother came to visit me 3 different times while I was there. And the first visit was with my grandmother, who was 85 years old. And it was just so fun to see them enjoying the community and seeing some of the culture. And we took a few side trips. And so that was very special. And when it was just my mother, we actually went to Japan and Singapore And so I got to show her parts of Asia. So then, because she saw me there in my home, in the office, in town, in my church, I think she went away feeling like I was fine, and she really saw why I enjoyed being over there.
That is amazing to have that kind of support, and it really does help a parent to do exactly what you just said, to go and kind of be where they are, because when they're missing you and while they're missing you, knowing the surroundings where you were and just even the safety that you would have been living in, that really does help a parent's heart, doesn't it?
Definitely, yes. And then our letters were much more fun after that.
So, Gail, you know, you're out overseas, you're in the Philippines all these years. During all of this time, the crew was changing, Campus Crusade for Christ was changing, and their headquarters changed as well during that time. How was that looking for you when you're over there and all the changes are happening back with crew back home? What was that like?
Well, we tried to keep abreast of what was happening there, but it's an interesting phenomenon when you're in, say, the Philippines. You're so focused there and you're excited about what God's doing there that we just had to focus there and expect that any earth-shattering changes we would deal with. So it was fun. It was fun to know we were still part of this whole international organization, but we were able to serve in that one country.
That's tremendous to give your heart to an area for so many years like that. And I'm sure that even now to this day, the Philippines, as well as the areas in Korea that you served in, probably own a very special place in your heart.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and nowadays with Facebook, you can communicate much more easily. But I do have to say that their lives and their letters and their messages just, yes, do play a special part in my life. And of course, I forget that they've grown since I left, but they're living for God. And that's exciting.
Now, you mentioned you went to college at the beginning of the program. You went to college in Oregon State. Were you from the northwest part of the country originally?
Yes, I was from Portland.
Okay. My daughter spent a couple of years in Portland. That is one beautiful area.
Oh, yes. I do miss it very much. The scenery is just uncomparable.
Well, when I would go driving around to run to the grocery store or something for my daughter, and I'd be out by myself. And it's so weird living in Florida. You don't get the scenery that you get out there when you look out and you see in the distance Mount Hood rising up the way it does. There's other mountains that you can see from out there as well. It's just tremendous.
It is. And in the first trip I took from Orlando back to Portland to visit family and supporters and friends, it's very barren toward the middle, in the middle part. But when the mountains appeared, I really literally gasped, because it just reminded me of what I grew up with and what I was missing in that respect.
Wow. So where were you living at the time when Campus Crusade made the move to Orlando?
I was still in the Philippines.
Still there, okay.
I was still living in the Philippines at that time, so we were keeping track long distance on that. It was a very good move.
Sure.
At that time, I had no idea that I was going to be ministering there and serving there eventually.
That is funny how God does that. You're over in the Philippines and your organization's making a cross-country move of their own. And I remember I was in Orlando during the season when Campus Crusade moved down around the Moss Park area, south part of Orlando, and got to go to one of those prayer meetings with Dr. Bright. And that was a real privilege to be a part of that day of prayer and fasting. And that was tremendous. Mm-hmm. So you've worked with this organization in a number of different ways. What was your main role while you were in the Philippines? What would have been your area of ministry specialty?
Well, my assignment was in the Asian headquarters office, which you know, my administrative skills were used there, definitely. But my real heart was out, you know, out with others. And like you said, I love telling people about Jesus and helping them live for him. And so that's why I loved ministering through my church and with others in the community, and then helping in other countries too during these conferences. So it was, I've explained it, it was a, you know, a dream job.
A dream job that you get to tell people about the Lord, use the gifts and the skills. You know, this all sounds a lot different from the kind of fear that a lot of people grew up when, you know, I in my church, people that didn't want to go to missionary functions that or missionary nights at their church. And the reason they didn't want to go, it's funny when I look back at it, because they were afraid that they would have a call on them to go to Africa or to go to another country. And time after time, when I talk to people like you that spent decades of their lives away in another country, they speak of it in only the fondest of terms, because that's exactly what God put in your heart. You were doing what God wanted you to do, and he made it to be what you wanted to do. And that's a, you know, I heard a story, and you as a missionary would probably relate to this. This pastor was telling the story similarly to what I did. And he said, you know, if God was going to call somebody to Africa, that would be the greatest thing in their heart, because that's, he would have put it in their heart that that's what they wanted to do, just like he did you.
Oh, that's a perfect way to explain it, really. He does put his plans, his desires into our hearts. And the thing is, he creates a passion in our hearts to do what he's calling us to do. And the thing is, especially when you go to a foreign country, I mean, God is just so there with you, and you see him taking care of every need, just like he does here now. And it's such a privilege to be able to really to go out of your own continent. And I had no idea how exciting and fulfilling and rewarding that was going to be.
It is exciting to go to a place where you've never been before. And this is something I've had people from, like Missionary Ventures, on my program as well. And, you know, the joy that they have of taking people who they've never left the United States before, and they go on a short-term missions trip. Now, you've been on more than that, but even a short-term missions trip, that joy of going into a new culture, a new area, and making a difference for the Lord in whatever way, whatever role, I like the word you use, whatever your assignment is, that's what you're doing. You're doing it for the glory of God, and that brings about such a great joy, and I've loved the missionary trips that I've been able to take before. How often did you come back to the States when you were in those years in the Philippines?
Well, about two and a half years in between. And it's amazing how that time just passes because you're so involved in what's going on right in front of you.
Now,
you mentioned mission trips. Those are the greatest things, no matter what organization it is, because it opens our eyes, it opens our ears, it gets us acquainted with people from different cultures. And many people after mission trips will come full time in a ministry. And so that, yes, we laugh about, I went for 6 months, which was more than a typical mission trip, but it really became my mission trip because it brought me over there. And so God could speak to me there. And in my example, I went on to the Philippines, but I think I would have been much more interested in making some impact overseas after being there.
Now, you mentioned something in segment one about one of the gatherings in the Korea trip that you took that was largely attended, if I could say it that way. What was the biggest gathering that you've ever seen people come to a meeting in one of these countries?
We also had large conferences in the Philippines as well. We had a prayer conference. In 1980, we had a whole project. We were trying to reach, all of us there, the national staff and everyone else, trying to reach out into what they call the barrios and extend the chances to preach the gospel. Mm-hmm. And they mainly used the Jesus film. And that we in all these barrios, and at that time, they had to carry the projectors on their shoulders. Nowadays, they have a projector and a DVD. But in those days, we really had to go out into the rural parts. And all of us had a chance to join one of those outings. So I was a week up in the North Philippines. And it, again, that was a life-changing thing. Not so much the number of people, but each place we went, all the people in that barrio attended, and you saw them sitting on the ground, mesmerized by what they were seeing. Now, many had never seen a moving picture, so that was fascinating in itself. But especially because the Jesus film shows how Jesus was crucified and died for us, and so many were weeping just to realize what mm-hmm. he had done for them. Because here, this is a Catholic nation, and so they were acquainted with Jesus, but just to see visibly what he had done for them was amazing. And I love the pictures, especially that show these small children just staring at the screen, and you know that God's planting seeds in their hearts just through that film. And so there was such an expansion that took place during 1980. I really just admire the Philippine staff and all the volunteers that made that possible.
The people that put together that film originally, I'm sure they had no idea. Can you imagine being some of the actors that played in that film and thinking they were doing a really a close replica of the story of Christ, but just to look back and see how the Lord has blessed that film through time and time again in language after language. I don't even have any idea, maybe you do, how many languages it's been translated into, but it's gone around the world. And I was thinking when you were talking about the early days of showing the film, the way technology has changed in the ways they now present the film. But in the early days, it was basically a roll of celluloid film, literal,
yes.
16 millimeter film, big old mm-hmm. reels of it, and a big mm-hmm. old heavy projector, and they would set that up. And even though that now they have ways of showing it digitally, it's the impact is still the same. And the film is basically still the same. All these years,
yes.
that film has brought untold thousands of people to faith in Jesus as they've seen the impact of the crucifixion.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's 1,500 languages. I could be wrong on that, but it is amazing to see how they do that, the lip sync process where they can translate into any language. And I will say that there have been people who have lost their lives being part of that ministry, and we recognize them and honor them there in our headquarters here in Orlando. And they literally gave their lives so that others could hear about Jesus. So, and the Magdalena film, which is a film that is more for women, that's just been having an amazing effect as well.
I am talking to Gail Porter, who spent 50 years with Campus Crusade, now called CREW, And we're going to be back with Gail. She has some books to her credit, and we want to find out about some of those books, as well as a couple of themes that she's written on. It's all coming up on Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. This is The Shepherd. On the line with me today is Gail Porter. She is an author. She is a missionary. She is a faithful teller of the story of Jesus. And I love hearing this through her life and through the impact that she's been able to have, first in Korea on a missions trip that she took there that kind of opened up the door, and a great love for Asia, as she puts it. And then she went from there to the Philippines. And I think you said over 20 years in the Philippines, right?
Right, 23.
23 years of serving the Lord in the Philippines. And now you're back in the United States, not just the United States, because we all know that Campus Crusade moved its headquarters to the good old sunshine state of Florida, specifically South Orlando, not too terribly far from the airport, OIA. And they have made a big impact on the Central Florida area since arriving here. And of course, Dr. Bright was still around. He was still with us, and we're so grateful for the life that God gave this man, Bill Bright, who was such a visionary, and just his love for the Lord and the way that Crew has taken this film that we were talking about into, you said, 1,500 languages. That is just a great story, and an amazing amount of people have been reached through that. But you have an ongoing ministry. Tell us about what God is doing in you.
Yes, well, let me just say, when you mentioned about Dr. and Mrs. Bright, they were at the headquarters in California. So we were all just one big family back in those days. And so we just had personal interaction with them. It was a great, wonderful gift and experience. And then they, when I returned to the headquarters here in Orlando, they were here. So it was like coming home. It's like full circle there. But as a result of being at the headquarters, actually, I continued assisting Dr. Thomas Abraham, who I had worked for in the Philippines. So he located in Orlando, as I did, and other staff. And so I continued serving with him with a focus toward Asia. So in a sense, it was an extension of my ministry in Asia. But eventually, I became acquainted with a group of women who wanted to start a ministry resource for women in the U.S. and other countries. And it was called, at that time, The Significant Woman. And so I was invited to an initial training where the idea evolved to write some women's courses. So the first one was called The Significant Woman, the second one, Soaring. But the wonderful part of that is that I had a part, you know, help in the co-authoring of those two courses. So that not only drew my passion of people knowing about Christ and serving him, but still using my love of writing as well. Mm-hmm. So I was part of the team of putting that together, and we did preview conferences in many different countries so that they could get a taste of what it was like to be in these small groups using this resource. And that was amazing. That took me to many countries, a lot, mostly in Asia, some in Europe. We went to Russia recently. And so just seeing those women take it and run with it, and now groups flourishing, and that's been just a wonderful part of my experience. And eventually I went full time with them. Now it's called the Significance Project, just because we have more than the Significant Woman course. But it's been wonderful to know and have a direct part on that team.
Now, we know that all things change and come to an end. It'd be great to just do something forever, but that's called heaven, and that day's coming, and we're going to get to do that kind of thing forever and ever. But your work overseas ended, and you moved back to Orlando, like you said, and you're a part of the Orlando community now, and somewhat of your responsibilities have changed too, and this love for writing is now, it's right front and center with you. Tell us a little bit about some of the books that you've written.
Yes. Well, actually, I wrote one book before I retired from Campus Crusade, and that was called Life Through Loss. And the subtitle of that is Facing Your Pain, Finding Your Purpose. And the way that evolved is I had cascading illnesses and death in my family just over a very short period of time. And I saw God change my life through that loss. And that's how this book evolved, because I was able to tell all the stories of my family and how God had prepared them for heaven and weave my story in too. About halfway through writing that, God said, this is actually about your journey. So I thought, oh, it's not just my family's journey, but mine as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did is, after my brother died, that death, his death, was the one that most impacted me. And so I needed to work through that just like I did for the other losses. But as he passed away from leukemia, he left behind four adult children. Three of them had children of their own. But the interesting thing was, before Greg's illness, I was more of a participant in my family. I got a lot of news from my brother about his children, but I prayed for them. I loved them, but again, from a distance. But once he became ill and passed away, these four adult children and I came together. Initially, it was I was being family for them, but then I realized they're family for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I no longer was a spectator
mm-hmm.
of their busy lives, but I became a hands-on aunt at that point. And as I did that, as my heart really engaged with their hearts and my compassion and care for them expanded, I realized God had given me a new kind of life. He had expanded my life in a way I'd never experienced before. And that really relates to the second book. But this one, my passion for writing this one was that people would go through that necessary grieving period, but they would take that one next step into God's new plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know people that have gotten stuck in the grieving and they just can't get over that. And so my desire, my heart is, here's my story, and this is what God did and gave me a whole new life, and you can have a new life too. It's different, but it's a wonderful new plan from God, and he will incorporate your loss into helping you be who you need to be in your new season. So I loved doing that book, and it's interesting how that was published in 2014, and people still are asking for that now. And I just recently sent one off to a friend that I had met who had lost her daughter. So I love that that's part of my ministry.
Well, while we're talking about this, in case someone's hearing this and thinking, oh, that's right where I am right now, how can they get a copy of this book?
Yes, it is on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble as well. But if you, yes.
Called Life Through Loss, Facing Your Pain, Finding Your Purpose. And the author is Gail Porter. That's Gail Porter. So be sure and look for that. That sounds like it would be such a help, such a resource to people, because that's something, you said something that's so true. Every life that goes through a pain and problem and sometimes includes death when we have a loved one like your brother passes away, that often all opens up a new segment of our life that we just would not have believed that could have ever been opened up. And it's like death opens up to life. That's all part of God's wonderful sovereign plan. Only he can do that. Only he can put that together.
Yes, so beautiful the way you express that. Yes.
Well, you've also touched on a lot of writing on another subject, and I'd love to spend a little bit of time on that one as well, and that is a fear of rejection. Now, this is something that all of us go through pain, all of us go through death, and I will say this, many also struggle from this fear of rejection. It's sometimes expressed differently, but basically people do grow up with this fear that is an inordinate fear in most cases, but feels like it's ordinate. It feels like it's there for a purpose, but the enemy uses this so often in people's lives. And how has your writing kind of been a tool for you in fighting this?
That's an excellent question. Actually, I'd written some about this book, totally different title. And then once I was working here at home rather than at Campus Crusade, I had more time to devote to it. And the thing that happened as I was putting this together, and God gave me the titles of the sections, the chapter titles, and the Holy Spirit writes with us, you know, from experience. So as God was putting this together, one section is about breaking the barriers that keep us in captivity. And I can explain that a little bit more. But I was thinking of what examples can I give to readers to help them see some reasons that they are in captivity. And there were things like performing, wearing an invisible mask, building a wall, creating a persona, kind of a facade to guard people from knowing us, and then seeking perfection. And so as I was writing about those, I just laughed one day and said, I have used every one of those. And it was rather shocking for me to realize, but the thing that had happened is all that had transpired in my life up to that point had caused me to build a guard around myself emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And that evolved beginning in my childhood on through to the middle of my time in the Philippines. And I didn't fully know about that, and others didn't see it at all. In fact, people I knew back in those days are shocked to know about this journey I've been on to really have God take me out of that captivity and begin to show me freedom, because you can cover up really well. I call it the great cover up, because very easy. And the interesting thing, you know, and having this book, it just opens conversations continually around me.
Well, so, I think most everybody is exactly just the way you were. And when you have that self-revelation or realization that you are writing about and hearing about things that you've actually experienced yourself, these fears that you've actually hidden behind, I think every one of us have done that. There's no one that could honestly say that they have not dealt at some point with some measure of those fears.
Correct. I mean, it could be small or large. It could be, you know, something that's impacted their whole life and it is keeping them in captivity, and they may not even know about that. So that's why it's been such a wonderful experience for me personally, but for those who have read it and we've talked through it. But I want to backtrack just a little bit into my childhood, because while I was writing this book, I had to ask one day, Lord, how did this fear of rejection evolve? I could not see it. I couldn't evaluate what had happened, any one event or any particular thing in my growing up years. But God helped me see that I had not had loving connections built between my parents and my brother and me. And I will say they didn't see it modeled in their own families, so they didn't know how to build that connection that would enable them to show us love.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I don't even remember either of them saying, I love you. I didn't remember them being delighted when I bound into the kitchen from my night's rest or run in from playing outside. I mean, I never saw on their faces, oh, Gail, great, how was your day? I mean, we never talked about those things around our dinner table. And I couldn't remember where we sat. And I learned that's because nothing was taking place there that lodged in my memory.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend helped me really get in touch with the feelings I had in those early days, because until then I was looking with adult eyes. But as a child, I realized that I felt sad, I felt lonely, I felt unloved, and I felt unimportant. And those emotions just impacted my thinking, my heart, my prayers, because I saw why I was always trying to perform and get love and acceptance, because I hadn't had it. So once I understood that, then actually God rewrote the first chapter so that I could paint the picture of what that looked like in my household, in my family. And it's interesting, just as a side note here, that I was invited to be on this blog tour where 12 bloggers would review my book. And one of them said, I immediately identified when Gail said she didn't know where her family sat around the dining room table and nothing happened while they were together, because I've had that same experience. And she went on to tell me her very devastating childhood story.
Mm.
So we don't want to dwell on the past, but I think we do have to examine the past to see what effect the past has had in our present day. And so once I got more in touch with that, then this journey of freedom has been wider and deeper for me.
Not only has it been wider and deeper, but it's going to end up being a real blessing to many other people. And if there's one silver lining, Gail, that I found that difficult times in our own lives prove out to be silver linings for other people to help them. And I think of the scripture that says, comfort others with the comfort that you've received. And that's exactly what you're doing. You're giving away something that was realized as a painful lack in your own life, and yet you're using that now as a source and a resource for someone to find healing and hope in their own heart.
Yes. And I mean, just even one person being healed of that fear of rejection is just reward for me. And I had a friend in Portland, actually. She's in her 60s, and she read my book, and she emailed me, Gail, after reading your book and realizing I don't have to be involved in all these activities to get love and acceptance, I have found for the first time in my life liberty and peace.
Oh, it's great.
Yes, and it has absolutely set her free. And she's a person that wants to be involved in life and her church and her community, but it's not to gain love and acceptance. She said the love of God is all I need. So that was just music That's my ears.
Music to the ears. And it's with that we're out of time, but I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed today hearing your story. God bless you for investing all of these years in Campus Crusade Crew, and now doing it through the book. The name of the book, if I have this right, is Will the Real Person Please Stand Up? Rising Above the Fear of Rejection. Give us the way that, do you have a website that you point people to get in touch with you?
Yes, it's GailPorterAuthor.com.
Gail Porter, G-A-I-L, Gail, that way, PorterAuthor.com. And the books that we've talked about are Life Through Loss and also Will the Real Person Please Stand Up? And these are great books, great resources, and you are a great guest. And thank you for being with me.
Thank you so much, Mike.
It's been a joy to talk with you. And friends, thank you as well for being with me here on Afternoons with Mike. We'll be back next time on The Shepherd.